You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio. Welcome to the show. We are coming to you live from the 3CR studio in Fitzroy, and I am joined by Mary and Jacob. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Chloe and listeners.
Hope everyone's doing well this Friday morning, Friday the 8th of August 2025. And before we begin our show, we, Green Left and 3CR, recognise that we are being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. They are the original and rightful sovereign owners of this land. Australia was founded on the attempted genocide and dispossession of the First People. And we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation, and we stand with all First Peoples in their struggle for justice. And Jacob, did you want to give a little bit of a rundown for what's on the show today?
Yeah, so we for our program this week, we're going to be covering a number of things. So we are going to play a pre-recorded interview with Lydia Thorpe. Our team at Green Left just recently did an interview with Independent Senator Lydia Thorpe, where she's actually going to be talking about, you know, this whole red lines package against genocide. And so we're going to be having a bit of discussion about basically, you know, how we can fight combating genocide both against First Nations people here and Palestinians in Gaza. Then we'll probably get to go through various sort of different news stories. So there's actually been quite a lot of different developments. We actually want to kind of mark the anniversary of Hiroshima Day. It's been it's the 80th year anniversary. Yeah. And but we also want to have a bit of a discussion about the Queensland school strike, teachers strike that happened, where over 5,000 teachers went on strike in Queensland. Yay. We also want to talk about maybe some of the developments that are happening in Britain, especially around the emergence of this new left-wing party, drawing on articles from Green Left. And then we're going to be having an interview with Rachel Evans, who's a City for Sydney Palestine solidarity activist. And we just wanted to have a bit of a discussion with her, you know, talking about the big sort of massive Harbour Bridge protests that happened over the weekend, which actually in some ways might be a turning point for the Palestine solidarity movement. But actually, maybe to kind of start off, maybe I'll start off a bit of a kind of discussion on Hiroshima Day, because this year actually marks 80 years since the United States Army Air Force plane, Enola Gay, flew over the densely populated city of Hiroshima. And this is significant because they dropped the first atomic bomb used in wartime, which was known as Little Boy. And of course, it didn't just stop there. They 3 days later, they sent a more larger, more powerful plutonium bomb known as Fat Man, which was dropped over Nagasaki. And the thing is, the scale of the destruction of these atomic bombs killed between 150,000 to 246,000 people and devastated two cities. Shortly afterwards, Imperial Japan surrendered unconditionally to the Allied powers. Now, I think that, you know, this whole thing about the atomic bombing, I mean, one of the justifications that Western imperialists gave at the time, especially the United States, was this was all about ushering us into an age of peace. But the reality is that it didn't really usher us into an age of peace. In fact, Japan was very much already on the brink of surrender. It was very much really the opening sort of salvo in a new Cold War, which very much provoked a nuclear arms race between both the West and the Soviet Union to develop ever more powerful weapons of mass destruction.
And I think it was also their way, the US, of testing, because they hadn't really tested it on a country with lots of people before, and signalling thereby to the rest of the world, hey, we are the dominant force because we have these atrocious nuclear weapons. I think those two things are really important.
And I also think one of the things that challenged, and in fact, there were actually, you know, to the credit, you know, people like Albert Einstein and Bertrand Russell very much opposed the development of kind of nuclear weapons, and they were, you know, attempted to pressure Western powers to actually demilitarize or not use any of these sort of nuclear weapons, because one of the big philosophical kind of concerns was essentially humanity had actually developed a weapon that was capable of ensuring the mutual destruction of all civilization.
But Jacob, Einstein was actually, he supported it initially. He felt really guilty and regretful afterwards, and he joined the petition that one of the other scientists organized after they saw what kind of destruction it caused. And Bertrand Russell signed that petition as well, but that was after the bombs had been dropped.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean there. Following that, because I think there was also, I think, a sense that, I mean, because at the end of the day, I mean, the scientific developments around there, especially the ones that Albert Einstein contributed, very much laid the basis for the development of the nuclear bomb, and they had no, and I guess there was a sense that they had no idea what the type of destruction that it would is capable of.
And who was going to be pressing the button and controlling whether to drop it or not. So, yeah. You know, like US imperialist capitalists can't trust those kinds of people. Yeah, so I think they realised that as well. Einstein was a socialist after all.
Yeah. And actually, Penny, you wanted to add something to the discussion, Chloe?
Jacob and I were just talking about Penny Wong's comments on Twitter and other places. Should I read it out, what she said on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay, she said, "This week we mark 80 years since the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were devastated by the first and only use of nuclear weapons in war. We honor those who lost their lives and stand with the survivors and families who continue to bear the legacy in unimaginable suffering." Sounds like a nice thing to say, but it's actually quite sickening when you sort of look deeper, because ministers like Penny Wong promise peace while supporting Trump's China war drive. Penny Wong, on one hand, is saying Australia reaffirms its commitment to a world free of nuclear weapons, but they've committed, well, her and her government have committed more than $368 billion for nuclear submarines, and they talk about peace, but they don't want you to know that Australia has aspirations to become one of the world's top 10 weapons exporters. And they are 8 years into that 10-year plan to make that happen. Australia keeps supplying F-35 parts to Israel used in the genocide against Palestinians. So to me, that's not really learning from the horrors of the nuclear war and Hiroshima Day. That's not honoring the lost lives, that's not standing with the survivors and families who continue to bear that legacy and that suffering.
And I guess one thing to kind of add is one of the classic things about Penny Wong's kind of statement is that she has this love for using the passive kind of voice. So when she made that kind of statement, she didn't even really make any reference to who actually launched the bombs to begin with, which was the United States. And so, you know, it's a sort of classic kind of wordplay that politicians like to use, and especially the media when it has covered the kind of atrocities that have been happening in Gaza, and they often hide behind this sort of passive voice where they don't directly name who's actually perpetrating the violence.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't talk about how after the war, the US created the hydrogen bomb, which is 1,000 times more powerful than the bombs dropped on both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And, of course, now lots of countries, well, there's 9 countries that that we clearly know have got nuclear weapons, and they've developed much, much stronger bombs, especially the USSR and the USA. It's really scary. And the other interesting thing is that China is the only country that said it would never use bombs as a first strike weapon. The US has never pledged that they wouldn't do that. And now with Trump, you know, that's really concerning, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, probably one thing we can't forget is really the level of destruction. You know, I've read a lot of, I've read articles that kind of state that, you know, the scale of the destruction, even though nuclear weapons haven't been used against Gaza, the scale of the destruction is almost equivalent to a number of nuclear kind of bombs being launched onto it.
Yeah, and you know the other thing. Sorry, going back to the fact that the US has never said it would never use these weapons as the first use against another country, is that the US president does not have to consult with anyone else. It's just up to him, and of course it's a him at the moment. He makes a decision about whether to press that button or not. No colonels, generals or anything like that within the USA, and, of course, no one else amongst world leaders. That Dr. Strangelove film just always flashes in my mind when I think of that. That's a great movie, incidentally, if people haven't seen it. The other interesting thing about the Hiroshima thing is that the tests that were done with, like, in America, in New Mexico, before they actually dropped them on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, was done in an area that was predominantly Native American, Hispanic, and also Anglo-Americans. So it just shows their disregard for their own people, and a lot of these people are still seeking compensation for what happened to them as a result of those tests.
Yeah. Well, it's a recurring issue in so-called Australia, where often when it comes to, because, you know, we don't have nuclear weapons, but there is this whole issue of what you do with nuclear waste, uranium waste from nuclear power or uranium mining and so on. And often there's been a lot of struggles around First Nations land, because often they often target, corporations often target First Nations land for the dumping of uranium waste. It's very much a recurring kind of fact in history that often, disproportionately, it's First Nations land sovereignty that's threatened by, you know, by Western powers investing in nuclear weapons and also including nuclear power.
And some commentators think that the Israeli bombing of the nuclear sites in Iran can lead now to more countries wanting to have nuclear weapons as, you know, in inverted commas, deterrent to countries like Israel, the US, whoever, attacking them. So it's actually putting the arms race, the nuclear arms race, back on the agenda, sadly.
Yeah, but also I think, you know, one of the facts about that is the fact that why is it that, you know, countries like the United States and Israel seem to have the largest stockpile of nuclear weapons? Because often the kind of Western liberal kind of justification for why they have to hold nuclear weapons is, countries like the United States and Israel, you know, they're so democratic, they're so liberal, that if, you know, if we didn't have them, there's nothing stopping our barbarous sort of neighbours attacking us and destroying our country. Yet actually, really, The fact of the matter is that it's the United States, countries like the United States and Israel, that have been the kind of main aggressors in a whole host of conflicts and wars. So actually, in a sense, there's actually a strong case that some of these more oppressed countries, why they would want to possess nuclear weapons as a deterrence against the United States and Israel from invading and invading them and killing their people.
Or just dropping bombs on them and killing their people, which is what Israel did to Iran recently. So, yeah, and when you talk about countries being democratic, if there's only one person in your country who can make the decision about whether to drop those bombs or not, that's not really democratic. That's scary.
Yeah. And there's a long history of anti-nuclear campaigning in this country.
Mm.
And most people have endorsed Australia signing on to the treaty of the prohibition of nuclear weapons. And Labor promised to sign that before they were elected in 2022, but they haven't done it. Instead, they're just prioritising the AUKUS military pact with the US and Britain, and they're opening up our ports to nuclear-powered submarines, and they're just tying us further to US warmongering in the Pacific.
Yep. They're happy to be on board with that, I think, our leaders.
Yeah. We're going to go to a quick break. Stay tuned for more Green Left.
We're not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And Wusot would go play a quick song before we play our first pre-recorded interview of the program. And this is by Japanese Breakfast, and the song is Boyish. All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio, and you're just listening to Boyish by Japanese Breakfast. So now it is time for the pre-recorded interview that we're going to play. So this is an interview that Green Left produced, and it's part of the Green Left show. So this is the 64th Green Left kind of show. And this this involved Gunnar Gojimara Dajubirong Independent Senator Lydia Forbes, who was the guest. And Forbes spoke with Green Left's Alex Bainbridge about combating genocide, both against First Nations people here and Palestinians in Gaza. They also discussed the Red Lions package, which will be reintroduced into Parliament, and also talking about the ongoing travesty of black deaths in custody. Listeners, we'll be playing this for the next 19 minutes, and you can actually, if you want to look at the video or listen to it back later, you can go find it on the Green Left website at greenleft.org.au. Hope listeners enjoy.
G'day, my name's Alex Bainbridge. Welcome to the Green Left Show. Today I'm talking with Lydia Thorpe about standing up against genocide, both genocide against the people of Gaza and genocide against First Nations people in this country today. Before we get underway, I want to acknowledge that this episode of the Green Left Show is being recorded on stolen First Nations land, always was, always will be Aboriginal land, and we pay respects to elders and warriors past and present. Federal Parliament resumed last Tuesday amidst thousands of people protesting against the ongoing genocide in Gaza and the Australian government's refusal to do anything about it. We also saw on that same day Green Senator Maureen Faruqi was sanctioned because she held up a sign against the starvation of children in Gaza. We also saw One Nation senators turning their backs on the acknowledgement of country in the Federal Parliament. And we also saw, as I said, the federal government take zero action against the genocide. The protesting outside Parliament was particularly calling on the government to sanction Israel. We've certainly seen some stronger words from Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister, and Penny Wong, the Foreign Minister, but we've seen zero, absolutely nothing in the way of concrete action to stop the genocide in which Australia is complicit. Things the Australian government could do include obviously sanctioning Israel, taking a stronger diplomatic protest, expelling the Israeli ambassadors, cancelling the $900 million contract with Elbit System, refusing to allow the United States to use the Pine Gap spy base for the targeted genocide of the people of Gaza, among many, many other actions. So I'm here with Lydia Thorpe, and I began by asking her to talk about one positive initiative which is in the federal parliament, and that is the Red Lines package. The Red Lines package against genocide. It was actually introduced into the last parliament by Lydia Thorpe and Senator Fatima Payman from Australia's Voice. I asked Lydia today to begin by just saying, what is the Red Lines package? What's in it? What is it aiming to achieve? And which politicians are likely to be supporting it?
Sure. Look, the Red Lines package has been a culmination of stakeholders, experts, legal experts in the field. And the Red Lines package was introduced last year in the last parliament. It had to be introduced by Fatima Payman because I was suspended the day that it was to be introduced. And it was, you know, a coincidence that I get suspended on a day that we're meant to be talking about stopping genocide, not only in this country, but in Palestine and everywhere else. I've got the day off today.
Good timing.
I've been suspended. I've been censured.
You're dropped out.
And I wear those disciplinary colonial actions like a badge of honour. Colonial violence is ongoing. You see and you hear of the evidence of genocide. You look at the definition of genocide. They are guilty of all of those things. Around the world, with First Peoples, Indigenous peoples, who are suffering, who are having their lands invaded, raped, pillaged, children being slaughtered,
We are in solidarity now. We are connected through our trauma, through our resistance. We're looking after each other now. And that scares this place, I can tell you. So we are rising. We are rising, and I believe that we are stronger than we've ever been before.
So the red line package is basically to stop fueling the genocide and to hold politicians accountable to signing up and aiding and abetting in genocide here and abroad. It's about not trading in any way, shape or form with any country that is committing genocide or crimes against humanity. And we know that this country is already aiding and abetting in the genocide of Palestine, Palestinians, because we still trade with parts to the arms that are being used against innocent people in Palestine. So the Red Lines package is a number of different parts, three parts to the Red Lines package that ultimately address this country being complicit in the ongoing genocide of Palestine and others. So there has been, or there is still being worked on, some changes to the Red Lines package, which will be reintroduced. So we're just waiting for it to be finalised before I can reintroduce the package. Obviously, Fatima Payman, Senator Payman, is a co-signature to the package. And as I understand it, the Greens will be supporting the package. Senator Pocock is still thinking about it. And, yeah, I don't think we're going to get much support from anyone else in the parliament, unfortunately, which means that ultimately, they're complicit too.
You'd like to think that opposing genocide would be a no-brainer, but can you tell us what was the reaction from Labor and Liberal last time this package was introduced?
Well, it wasn't debated, so it's just a formality, really. When you introduce a bill, it's just, you know, saying those words in the chamber. And because I was suspended, there was no room for debate. It was just put on the papers and they went on with business as usual. But this time I will be forcing a vote and I hopefully will have some debate, and we want an inquiry into the three elements of the package so that we can further scrutinise what does this look like? What parts is this country sending to Israel to aid and abet in the genocide? And what other trade is happening between this country and Israel that's assisting them to commit these crimes against humanity? So we have flagged, or I have flagged with the government, that we would like an inquiry at least. We know that they won't support these bills, but usually a senator has the opportunity to go into an inquiry as part of that bill, and I'm not getting much positive feedback from them so far about that.
So Tuesday last week was the final day in which thousands of people participated in the Canberra Convergence. Their main demand was calling on the Australian government to sanction Israel now. So far, the government's refused to take any specific action along those lines. But I'm wondering if you could talk about that demand for the government to sanction Israel and for the broader boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign.
We know Penny Wong and others, or the Prime Minister, come out condemning the genocide, not in those words, obviously, but, you know, they've come out with stronger words about what's going on, particularly starving people, and signing up to, you know, a document with other countries condemning Israel's actions. But we don't see any action from this government, and we need to start divesting and boycotting Israel as a action that, you know, that Israel will take more seriously and show the rest of the world that, you know, we mean business here, and we're not going to do any business with a regime that continues to commit genocide and crimes against humanity. So I've supported divestment and boycotting for, you know, since this genocide started, and that's been a long time, and I know that many others have. I got in trouble, in fact, when I was with the Greens for saying that I supported it because it wasn't their policy at the time. But, you know, we need to take serious action here. We can't just sit on our hands and sign up to a document and think that that's enough. We need to take action and divest and boycott Israel. And we need to do that as a matter of urgency. So I support that campaign, and I will do whatever I can to remind people in the parliament that these are some simple actions that we can be taking as a nation.
Look, I also wanted to ask about the ongoing issue of black deaths in custody. In June, we saw the death of Kumanjaya White, killed by police in the Northern Territory. Since then, we've also seen the coroner in the Northern Territory make the explicit finding about Zachary Rolfe that he is racist. He was a police officer who killed another Aboriginal person previously. He's also putting himself forward as a paid motivational speaker, which is somewhat offensive in the circumstances. Can you talk about these recent developments and the ongoing travesty of deaths in custody in this country?
Well, as Chelsea Watergo would say, it's another day in the colony. The racism, you know, came here in 1788 through colonisation, and we've been dealing and resisting the racist occupation in this country. What we're seeing in the Northern Territory is you know, exemplifies what we've been dealing with for over 200 years. To have racist cops, you know, killing our people is nothing new, but, you know, to be found guilty of that through a colonial process is something new and something that needs to be taken seriously. The Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody clearly states that we need to have self-determined solutions, that we want to have investigations that have experts involved in the investigation rather than cops investigating cops. We need to stop investing in prisons and cops. We know the federal government has given money to the Northern Territory coppers. For what? We already have, you know, 91% of the population, when we're talking about children, 91% of the prison population is of our kids. So this is an act of genocide. It is specified in, you know, the meaning of genocide is to lock our children up, to cause harm, to take our children away. Well, you know, NT is exemplary in their genocidal practices and policies against our people. So, you know, just to see particularly the Yindamu community have two of their young people killed at the hands of the system, or killed at the hands of racist police, is really distressing. It's distressing not only to them but to every blackfella in this country, because we all feel that pain, we all know that pain, and we want justice. The family want justice, and we need the feds to take it seriously again, implement the recommendations to the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, and listen to the family. That they have self-determined solutions. Get guns out of communities.
It's been more than 30 years since the Royal Commission into Black Deaths in Custody released its recommendations, which have been largely ignored. 600 deaths, more than 600 deaths later, Aboriginal people are still being killed. But here in Queensland, for example, where I am, the state Liberal National Party government is planning to reintroduce laws against public drunkenness, which goes exactly in the opposite direction to what the Royal Commission recommended. On the other hand, we've recently had this report by the so-called anti-Semitism envoy, Julian Siegel, talking about, you know, making a range of recommendations, including quite offensive recommendations that really attack at the heart of free speech and so forth. Yet this report is being taken seriously. So I'm wondering if you could make any comments about the contrast between the reactions to these two sets of recommendations.
Look, all I can say to that is racism is racism. And this country was founded on racism. And we need to eradicate all forms of racism in this country. And we need a human rights bill. We don't have a human rights bill. So as long as we don't have a human rights bill, human rights will continue to be violated. And anti-Semitism is racism, but so is Islamophobia. So is the racism that we endure every day as First Peoples in this country. So we need to look at it holistically and stop this country being so racist so that we can all benefit from the fruits of what this country has to offer. We need a human rights bill, which, you know, this Labor government was supportive of before they got into government. Yet, you know, this is their second time round. I sit on the Human Rights Committee within the Federal Parliament, and it's a good committee. So we have a real opportunity here to actually have a human rights bill. The UK has one, so their mates, the colonisers over the road that they bow to all the time, they have one. So why don't we? It's time we had one, and that's what we can do out of all of this.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish up, including actually about the links between genocide against First Nations people in this country and genocide against the people of Gaza?
Well, you know, genocide is perpetrated by the colonisers because they want to steal land for themselves. And to steal land and resources, they need to kill the people and remove the people from the lands. So we know what that's about, and we've resisted that, we've survived that, and that's why we do stand in solidarity with Palestine, because it's the same approach, it's the same strategy to steal Palestinian land, to dispossess Palestinians from the land that they come from, resisting. And standing up to the colonizer is something we have to do together. And this starvation of people and what they're doing to families and Palestinian people is just cruel, inhumane. It's crimes against humanity. It's genocide. And as long as this country allows this to happen, then they are complicit in this genocide.
Thank you so much for your time today, Lydia. We are truly very lucky to have voices such as yours in the Federal Parliament.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and watching or listening to this episode of The Green Left Show. As I said at the beginning, if you like the work that we do, please do become a Green Left supporter. It is the number one way to support the work that we do and to receive the content that we produce. But even without spending a cent, you can still support our work by just sharing this episode of The Green Air Show, tell your friends about it, pass it on to anyone who you think might be interested, help us to build the audience for The Green Air Show, and we will see you next time.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And you're just listening to an interview with First Nations Senator Lydia Thorpe talking about the Red Lines Against Genocide bill that has been kind of discussed and tabled in the federal parliament. So I would like to go introduce that we're going to be playing a song. We'll be playing Silk by Wolf Alice, and just giving a bit of a shout out to Wolf Alice. Wolf Alice is actually one of the more popular alternative rock bands that has also been very outspoken about supporting Palestine. In fact, they're one of the many artists that actually supported boycotting Israel even way before October 7. So give a bit of a shout out for Wolf Alice for their solidarity. So hope listeners enjoy.
Fault is that if it wasn't mom and dad,
well, it must be yours.
We'll have none of that.
No.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we thought we'd use the next 10 minutes to talk about, you know, some news, some of it drawn from the headlines and others drawn from the pages of Green Left. So I thought I would give a bit of a positive kind of news story coming from Britain. But this actually story has actually quite a lot of parallels with Australia as well, because, you know, in Australia, a lot of our elected politicians are actually landlords. In fact, the good majority of them are landlords. A lot of them own investment properties, etc. Also, a lot of them own rental properties, like our very own Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. Now, there's been a big scandal towards the homelessness minister, Rushanara Ali,
in
Britain, and there was a bit of controversy because it was found that she had increased the rent on a property that she had that she owned in East London by £700. Now, £700 a month is quite a lot. Increasing it by £700 a month is a lot, and of course she had to kick out all her existing tenants to make that kind of rent increase, which actually says quite a lot, because often it is a trick from landlords that they all often kick out the tenants, get them to vacate, etc., so they can actually make a bigger increase on their rent than they otherwise would be able to make legally if they were still there. There was a big media scandal about it. I mean, because everyone's kind of angry with the Keir Starmer government, because, I mean, the Keir Starmer government, you know, if you thought the Albanese government was bad, I mean, you should sort of see what the Starmer government is like. And so there were calls for her to step down from homelessness charities and opposition politicians. So, yeah, it was just obviously such a massive scandal that she just resigned from her ministerial position. And what was kind of funny is, in her sort of letter to the Prime Minister, she said that at all times I have followed all relevant legal requirements, but then she conceded that, if remaining for the role would be a distraction from the ambitious work of this government. so anyway, not really taking any responsibility for the harm that that she caused, but I just think it is kind of telling that, you know, someone who was appointed as the Minister for Homelessness is making people homeless.
Well, she's the Minister for Homelessness.
It's logical.
Her role very seriously.
But didn't she also, in a PR release or maybe in that letter, say that she had to resign because of the pressure by the media? Nothing about, you know, the ethics of what she had done.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, she basically said that implied in her own comics by saying that it would be a distraction for her to stay in her role because of all this sort of media kind of pressure.
Yeah, but pressure on her she couldn't cope with. On a different news item altogether, and as a teacher, I think, positive, is the Queensland Teachers Union has been on strike, first strike in 16 years, and something like over 50,000 Queensland Teacher Union members voted for taking strike action, and around 6,000 then rallied in Brisbane, but there were 30 other rallies around the state, so something like over 50,000 Queensland Teacher Union members took part. And whenever there's a strike, there'll be people who don't attend rallies. So there probably will be lots of people who support it, lots of members who supported the strike, but who just weren't present at those rallies. And they're asking the government for more than the pathetic 8% that the government has offered them over 3 years. They were also striking for improved working conditions. And if anyone knows anything about how hard teachers and other education workers work, then you'll know that that is such an important issue. And another issue that's related is also violence against education workers. They want the government to take action on that. So that's something that we need to watch and see what happens, because Victorian teachers are also taking action at the moment over there working conditions and pay claims too.
Hmm. And one of the kind of positive things to kind of highlight about this strike, I mean, I think this strike is very significant in a lot of ways. And I actually think we need to actually see more industrial action like this because, you know, when we're living in a cost of living crisis and it's clear that our governments are basically offering absolutely nothing to kind of in terms of improving the working conditions of the of public sector workers, which includes teachers. But yeah, one positive development that's come out of this is that the teachers union has actually committed to further action if the government is not willing to come to the table with a good agreement. So yeah, I think all the solidarity to the kind of teachers kind of fighting this, and we hope to see more industrial action and where they can win even some serious gains, because any sort of gains that they can win can serve as an inspiration for other education workers in other states.
Yeah, and hopefully push more union leaderships to take action, not just to see negotiations as the be-all and end-all of winning improved conditions and improved pay for their members, because that usually doesn't get you what you really want. It usually means that you get a compromise, if you're lucky, very little. You have to take action.
It's amazing that teaching, the profession itself, is so undervalued. And maybe that's because a lot of teachers are women.
Women. Yes, that's right. Yep. If this was a male-dominated area, like the construction industry, I think there would have been strikes a long time ago. And it's also sad to know that a lot of people who are in positions of authority in schools are actually men.
That's right.
Like principals and assistant principals. Nothing against that, but it's a feminized industry. But yeah, it repeats that hierarchy of men at the top and women doing all the shit work down the bottom.
That's right. And like mining companies, for instance, that's a male dominated industry, and you know, when people travel to work, they're paid. They're paid to relocate to take up a mining job. But teachers leave their family, they leave their friends to take up really difficult, stressful teaching positions. And it's really valuable to the community. But their hard work and sacrifices go unrecognized.
It's not just teachers. We have to also emphasise there's other workers, like, you know, education support staff, and they work really hard, and are paid low wages, lower than teachers. Their lunch breaks aren't even paid lunch breaks. At least teachers get that. But so, yeah, it's really important not to forget education support staff.
Yeah. And just want to make... I'm sorry, one little news story that just happened yesterday. So there was actually a student strike organised by the National Union Students and Students for Palestine, which was a national day of action. So there were a number of protests in a number of kind of cities. But yeah, I attended the Melbourne one, and actually the Melbourne one was really well attended. You probably had up to 500 to 600 people there. And probably what was striking is, and this is a good follow-up from the discussion about the teacher strike, is there were actually a number of high school students who actually participated who skipped school.
Yay!
Yes. And I guess, yeah, one thing to kind of note is the protest was actually attempted to occupy Flinders Street Station for a number of, like, maybe just, it was like only like 40 minutes, really. They didn't necessarily try to, it wasn't like an all-day kind of occupation or anything, but the police acted in a very heavy-handed way and basically started arresting some of the lead kind of organisers of the protest, which is actually a big, and I think this is a very big kind of concern, and actually kind of shows that, you know, we're going to be talking about the Harbour Bridge protest later, but, you know, the Palestine movement is clearly has a lot of broad kind of base support, and I think there's a certain element that, you know, the ruling class in so-called Australia are definitely getting concerned about the broad support. So hence why we might be seeing increased kind of repression of the Palestine solidarity movement.
Well, I was surprised that the judge gave the green light. I think maybe a few people were surprised by that. And if I was that judge, I would now be watching my back, because we know how the Zionists work. There's all this evidence coming out recently about them trying to coerce the judges in the International Court, whatever it's called. I'm sorry, I can't think of the name at the moment, who were threatened or offered deals if they, you know, went the way that the Zionists want them to go, rather than issuing arrest warrants for Netanyahu and his co-terrorists. So that's the kind of manoeuvres and shenanigans they get up to. They threaten people. Yeah, it's really bad.
There's a rally on Tuesday, August 12th, Defend the Right to Protest, 5:30, Parliament of Victoria. We're just going to go to a quick break. Stay with us.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Ah, we're back, listeners. This is 3CR, the Green Left Weekly Breakfast Show. It is 1 minute past eight, at least that's what the clock in here says. And we are now going to the Green Left Weekly Activist Calendar so that you can hear about all the important events coming up soon.
All right. So to kind of start off, let's see. I'm just getting the calendar now. So the first event I want to highlight is there is going to be an exhibition opening, paintings by Annette Alexander at the 6 p.m. at the Red Gallery. Not that far from 3CR, actually. It's at 157 St. George's Road in Fitzroy North. There is going to be a film screening of Speed Sisters at the Greek Democritus Workers League at 583 High Street in Northcote. There's also going to be a film screening of The Encampments, but unfortunately all the tickets are sold out for that. But I'll be attending, so I'll tell everyone how it is. And then on Saturday, I'll pass it on to Chloe to do the Saturday events.
Yeah, Saturday there's going to be a Palestine rally. It's in Dandenong. So anyone who lives in the southeast or surrounding suburbs, please let, you know, even if you can't attend, if you know anyone who lives out there, support this rally, Sanction Israel Now, 12 p.m., starting at Dandenong Market, which is the corner of Clow and Cleland Streets. And we're going to be hearing from a young Palestinian survivor of the genocide in Gaza, as well as other speakers in the community. Also, we've got our Green Left comedy debate also on Saturday, the theme Billionaires Should Run the Government. It's at 6:30 p.m. Brunswick Town Hall, 223 Sydney Road, Brunswick, corner Sydney Road and Dawson Street. We're going to have some really funny comedians, and it's going to be hosted by the delightful Tom Ballard. So please get your tickets if you haven't already, or you can buy them at the door. And there's also dinner and drinks provided. So we hope to see you there. And it's a fun
You have
fun
to
ring.
Buy your dinner and drinks.
You have to buy your dinner and drinks. Yeah. But it is a fun
In addition to
ring.
The Tixer ticket. Yeah.
Are we encouraging people to come? Yeah.
No, yummy, it's just that you yummy. Said provided. And I thought maybe some people might think that means.
That's true.
Yeah, it's for free. But
I'm sure
sadly,
there's a lot of generous people that can buy you dinner. So, yeah, just get coming and buy tickets. So
yeah, no one will be turned away at the door, but it's a fundraiser for Green Left. And, you know, if you want us to continue, if you want us to keep running the show on 3CR, if you want us to keep writing articles and keep producing people-powered, non-profit, independent, anti-war media that supports Palestine, please come and support us and have a laugh.
So I'll go into the kind of next events. So we've got the weekly Free Palestine rally at 12 p.m. on Sunday, the August the 10th, which I think, you know, will be an important rally. I think it's really important to, for, you know, given the scale of what's happening, but also the fact that I think the movement's on the up right now. I think we should be trying to get as many people to come to the weekly Free Palestine rallies.
And I think Melbourne has to show up. Sydney, we have to outdo them. My God.
Yeah. I mean, there was actually a whole thing about that from one of the rally organisers last Sunday. And there was sort of a funny point he made, and he sort of tried to make up for it by saying, well, you know, Melbourne has had the most rallies out of all the cities, which is true. So we have that going for us. And then there'll be a film screening of Israelism, which will be at 6:30 p.m. at the library at the docks. I'm not sure which group that's organising it, but yeah, I heard it's quite a good film. And then on Tuesday, August the 12th, there's going to be a rally around defending the right to protest at 5:30 p.m. at the Parliament of Victoria, Spring Street.
Thursday, August 14th, there's going to be a forum, How Can the Labour Movement Stand with Palestine? 6 p.m. Trades Hall, Lygon Street in Carlton.
Yeah. And then on Saturday, August the 16th, there's going to be a number of events. There's going to be a counter-protest, Don't Let Fascists Speak, at 11:30 a.m. at the Parliament of Victoria in Spring Street. Then there will be the live stream of the Green Left Powering Rebellion at 4 p.m. That will be happening online, but you can join other Green Left supporters at NAM in Melbourne at the Resistance Centre, Level 5, 407 Swanson Street in the city. And then I guess the last sort of event I'll sort of highlight is there is going to be another weekly Free Palestine protest at 12 p.m. on August the 17th. But there's also going to be an exhibition, Viva Cuba, Paintings of Cuba, at 2 p.m. at the Sisters of Mercy Studio, 618 Nicholson Street in Fitzroy North. And then I think we'll just finish up there just because I think we'll kind of overwhelm people with all these events. But actually the last event I'll just highlight is there's going to be a Boycott Caltex event at 10 a.m. at 71 Murray Road in Preston. So definitely recommend listeners get along to that.
3CR. As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in NAM.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest, President Donald Dump, leading the positive team. Take it away, Don.
It's going to be a big debate, a great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
This again, hey, you can blame all this insufficient brain, hey, same shit, hey, different day, hey, rivet trains, some of them thinking it's a game, hey, it's a shame, hey, it's insane, hey, saving face, make as if this is okay, hey, but quick your pace, hey, we got no time to waste, hey, cause any day, it's only a matter of time, it's a shame, it's a shame. This again, hey, flick your TV on, check the shit they say. It's a phase, why complain? Water waste, wondering if it's climate.
only a matter of time. I've been stressing, so depressing. Vomit choke, misdirected. Something rotten, from the cutting. That's a fact, that's a problem. Irritators hide their face from the papers. Desanation, Watergate investigation. Rivers taken, look at what we facing. All the fish are dead in the Murray Darling Basin. Never quit, never fade, till we've earthed them out today. I'm a fighter in my blood, this is in my DNA. My ancestors speaking through me, I'm connected to this place. Like the river, I got more to worry flowing through my veins. Got my head up in the clouds, but my feet up on the ground. I am not the only voice that you're hearing right now. I'm the power of my mouth, I'm the sound up in the crowd. Coming to shout, calling him out, yelling it out, saying it proud. Calling it death, calling it drought. You even know what I'm talking about. Fell in recovery, just took all this money. Went to the north, bought him a house. Back in the day, sat on the mission and we couldn't mention a word in the mouth. We couldn't talk, wasn't allowed. You better listen, we talking up now. I am the lie, I am the truth. I am the quarter cost in the news. I am the treaty, I am the truce. I am the problem, I am the proof. I am the bridge, I am the line. I'm the divide between the divine. I'm keeping the spirit of rivers alive. You'll think it is fine, but really it's only a matter of time. I am the river that flow in the bird. I am the air, I am the earth. I'm the goanna that lay in the dirt. I am the song I never heard. I'm here to work, I know what I'm worth. You are the one that delivered the hurt. Best that you probably begin with a smirk. We're giving the fight, paying no mind. Nothing for cotton, it's nickels and dimes. Nobody's stopping, I'm doing it twice. I got anxiety way on my mind. Sick and uptight, temperature rise. Living in flood, stuff of the flies. Sick and uptight, sick and uptight, sick and uptight. I feel like it's only a matter of time.
So we're back. This is 3CR. It is 8:11. No, 8. It's just gone 8:12 a.m. in the morning. And we were just listening to A Matter of Time by Dobie, who is a First Nations musician. The song is about action over against over-irrigation crisis in the Murray-Darling Basin. And it's a great song.
All right, so I want to kind of join, I want to introduce that we have Rachel Evans on the line for our first live interview of the program. So Rachel Evans is a member of Social Alliance, but is also a Palestine activist with City of Sydney for Palestine. And we thought we would have her on the program, especially since she actually wrote an article, published an article recently for Green Left, kind of reflecting and reporting on the significance of the Harbour Bridge protests that took place over the weekend in Gadigal land in Sydney. So, Rachel, good morning.
Good morning, team. How are we going?
Good morning, Rachel.
Yeah. So, just to start off, Rachel, what can you give us a bit of your a bit of an eyewitness report on like the significance of the Harbour Bridge protests and, you know, why what it kind of means for the Palestine solidarity movement?
Yeah, look, it was an amazing rally, absolutely spectacular, probably the third or fourth largest rally I've been to in my lifetime, and it was the second largest anti-war rally in Gadigal country with 300,000 people, and the first one was the anti-Iraq war one in 2003 in the harbour, in Hyde Park North. But this bridge action went global. And it was very staunch because the ALP Min state government attempted to stop it. There was driving rain, it was cold conditions, and yet people just kept pouring out of the station. And it just had so many different elements of Gadigal country, but also people from interstate. There was a few people who just flew in for the day and flew home again from Melbourne. And, yeah, it was just a very widespread uprising and support for the protest movement for Palestine. We also had 300 groups sign on, so it was a rapid rally organising. It was really within 1 week that the rally over the bridge was called, and the Min's government, New South Wales Police, took us to court the Friday before the rally on the Sunday, and we didn't know if we were going to win the court case, and we did, and then it was announced on 10:30 on Saturday that we'd won the court case, so the rally was the next day. So it was just, yeah, quite an amazing event to have pulled off. And, of course, the demands were very staunch: sanction Israel, aid for Gaza, end the two-way arms trade, immediate ceasefire, and withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. So very good demands, and a cross-section of the population. The churches turned up, the unions turned up, Craig Foster, a large swathe of the ALP MPs, not just from Sydney. So there was a 15 MPs in New South Wales signed on and endorsed the rally about 4 days out, and that included five ALP MPs, which represents a break, quite a public significant break with the Labor Party, which we want to we want to develop. And then also we had Bob Carr, who was a former foreign minister, marching up the front as well with Julian Assange. So, yeah, it was very significant.
Yeah.
And what can you kind of tell us? I guess I want to kind of hear a bit more about, you know, what do you think is some of the significance of the fact that one of the amazing kind of aspects of the protest was the fact that, you know, it has shown that because one of the kind of arguments that I think the government has been kind of putting against the Palestine movement, and they've been trying to ride on this sort of fact. They're trying to make out that, you know, the people sort of marching for Palestine, they're just a minority. They, you know, they're part of the fringe kind of left. They represent a kind of minority in society. That's why we can just get away with, you know, painting the Palestine Solidarity Movement as anti-Semitic. This is why we can paint them as like just being a bunch of radicals who don't represent the ordinary so-called kind of Australia. But what was quite striking about the Harbour Bridge protest was you did have the presence of Labor figures, but you also had the presence of, you know, a much broader audience that reflected a much larger diverse section of the Australian population. I guess, what do you think about that? What can you comment about some of the significance of this and how, you know, the Palestine movement is actually winning over a much larger masses of people than it has in the past?
Yeah, so look, that's a really good question. And look, just one of the most amazing shots and little videos that came out was people standing at Wynyard Station waiting patiently to get up the escalator to the road which led to the bridge because it was packed. And so really people started streaming out from 11 a.m. in the morning. The rally started at 1. And people were still climbing up the escalators by 3 o'clock. And between 1 to 2,000 people got turned away as the police closed the bridge. But there was one scene where the train announcer said, you know, and you'll walk up here and there's George Street and you'll turn to the left and there's the bridge. So she was giving logistics, but then she said, and let's make this happen, free, free Palestine. And the whole crowd erupted. It was just electric. And that didn't happen just once. It happened twice. So there was that, and then we were marching over, and the people who do the tourist bridge walk, they're all dressed in blue and they're, you know, tied to the Harbour Bridge in a health and safety way, but they stopped and cheered with us, and the whole crowd around us, of course, just erupts. They weren't there for the protest; they were there for the $200 a ticket bridge walk. But yeah, that represented the kind of, you know, we are everywhere. But then the polls also suggest that there was recent polls coming out saying, oh, here's a plane, 86% of the population want the government to do more to help feed Gaza and stop the war. So actually, and these are all of the polls that are now coming out in the first world global north countries, the majority of the populations want their government to stop supporting Israel. And so this is all of the hard work, the patient work that we've been doing in our local groups, in our bigger rally, city organising groups, in our unions, chipping away at the Zionist argument and the Labor Party's intransigence and support for Israel on so many levels. So it is working. And look, the one thing that was also pretty amazing about this rally, so Minns is a very Zionist premier here in New South Wales. He stuck the Israeli flag colours on the Sydney Harbour Opera House sails on October the 9th in 2023, and he's tried to outlaw protests in front of religious institutions. He also argued it was going to be total chaos. It'd be too much money for us to walk over the bridge. It's logistically impossible. So he threw a whole bunch of things against the rally, and then, of course, the Supreme Court case. Everyone turns up, and then what happens is that the police turn us back, and people would have seen this in the news. Then MINS and the New South Wales police come out and say, chaos, possible death, total danger, perilous, blah, blah, blah. When we got turned back, because there was too many people to go down this small foot road to Bradfield Park, people were totally calm, patient. We just adhered to the PAG organisers and also the police instructions to turn back, and we did a lap. But and that was also the MINS government just having to throw so much at us. I'd also note that the ABC, on the morning of the rally, ran an article saying that the location had changed, and this was not true. So we were getting calls from people saying, oh, are you not starting at Lang Park? We were like, no, don't believe anything they say. Just look at the Palestine Action Group page. So they threw a lot at us, and then MINS came out on Wednesday in New South Wales Parliament and tried to put legislation forward that would commodify the ability to protest. So you get three free protests, and then you'd have to pay for the police after it. So they didn't get that through, but they're always pushing. And, of course, people have woken up to the news that Netanyahu's saying that they're going to take control of all of Gaza, and an authority will be handed over to a third party soon. So, we just have to keep on organising, but we've got this wind in our sails because we had such an amazing success, massive rally, and now we're reorganising because people also would have seen... here's another marathon moment. Aeroplane. My plane. People would have seen the response to the rally from the ALP leadership from Penny Wong was $20 million for aid. And the figures on how many people have been shot, it's 1,400 people have been shot by snipers who are trying to reach aid. So that whole $20 million aid just comes with a whole sickening sense to the stomach. And then Albo said, we're going to call Netanyahu. And then you had MINS try and outlaw protest again. So, we haven't had much from the Labor Party government, but we know they're squirming, they're under fire, and we're going to just keep mobilising.
So, Rachel, obviously this would have been a first-time rally for many of those people that participated. In fact, I saw a post that was shared by a Jewish woman who said she had been... confused by or torn about going to rallies, and then she'd gone to this one on Sunday, and she said she only felt love from other protesters, that as she was walking along, she was holding a sign, that people were making signs of hearts and or mouthing thank you at her, so that she was so happy that she went. And watching it, of course, brought a tear to my eye, and I'm sure to lots of other people's eyes, about just seeing how moving and inspiring this was. I guess your question now is how to build on this, and also, as you said earlier, how to encourage that break in the ALP. What are your plans going forward?
Yeah, it was really important to have the anti-Zionist Jewish contingent there, and Anthony Lowenstein spoke on the platform. It was also really important to have Julian Assange there. He didn't speak, but, Bob Carr next to him, and Antoinette Latouf and Mary Kostakidis, all of the kind of key figures who have been hammered by the Zionists and the journalists and so on, the truth tellers, very important to have them there. I think, our next steps are August the 24th. So that's a National Day of Action that's been initiated by Palestine Action Group here in Gadigal Country, Sydney. And we're calling on all local groups and cities to mobilise on that day. again with a similar demand. And then we're also, the NTU, National Tertiary Education Union, is calling for a union-initiated day of action on September the 10th. There's a sign-on sheet for both rallies. And I'm sure you can get it from Jacob or any of the awesome team there in Melbourne. Sign on to that, keep the pressure on. And I guess just generally that capitalism is endless war. So this is, in one way, this is new for us. Well, you know, I'm 50 now, and so I got rebellious and radical during the Iraq war. But we have never seen anything like this, a genocide on Instagram. Every morning we wake up to the pictures and the images of Israel's genocide. And this complicity of the Western imperialist governments, their support and aid, it's something that we have to break. But capitalism is in its very dangerous last phase. And so we need to, as the chant says, we need to globalise intifada. We do need a revolution, and we've got to organise against this war machine. So I'm also keen on coming down to NAM for this Eco-Socialism Conference 2025 and collaborating with everyone on our next steps across the region to resist imperialism.
Yeah, really happy that you were able to speak with us this morning. For listeners tuning in, we're talking to Rachel Evans, a Palestine solidarity activist from Gadigal country, about the significance of the Harbour Bridge Palestine protests. And yeah, what an incredible moment in history, comrade. We saw the pictures and all those umbrellas, people embraced the rain, and just a massive show of solidarity, but also exercising their right to protest against a genocide. Yeah. Which was, yeah, really good to see. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we wrap up the interview, Rachel?
No, I guess the other thing that we're looking at in Gadigal country is the police repression in NAM. So solidarity and strength to all of those being more hammered by the police down there. And, we're going to get them. Keep organising.
Yeah. You're here.
Thanks, team. You have a great day.
You too, Rachel. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you
very much, stay Rachel. Tuned. Bye. Stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our land.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Welcome back, listeners. You're with Green Left Radio on 3CR. And we're coming to the end of the show, unfortunately.
Yep.
We've had a good show.
I was just saying to Chloe and Jacob, Rachel had said that capitalism is at its most dangerous stage. And it just reminded me of how when women leave abusive relationships, that's the most dangerous stage for them when they're leaving. So as we all want to leave capitalism, this is the most dangerous stage. But it's also an exciting time because we can look to a better future.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Before we leave, we do want to thank our guests, Rachel Evans and also Lydia Thorpe. You can read more about all of our stories that we talked about today, plus videos and left-wing analysis, book and music reviews, all at Green Left. .org.au. We also want to plug the fact that we're in the middle of a supporter drive, so we're trying to reach 300 subscribers. by the end of, I think it's, oh gosh, now I've forgotten the dates, but I think, you know, we've got maybe one week left to reach that, or maybe it's the end of the month. Maybe it's the end of the month. But yeah, we want people to subscribe to Green Left. It's as little as $5 a month. So think about those, you know, Netflix or whatever subscriptions that you have. Maybe get rid of those and subscribe to Radical Media, or you can keep both if you can afford it. And yeah, become a Green Left supporter. Come to our comedy debate tomorrow night at Brunswick Town Hall, 6:30, and support Green Left that way too. Your support is greatly appreciated. And do Jacob or Mary have any last words before we wrap up?
Just, you know, stay strong, keep the fight going, and we'll see you again next Friday.
Yeah, see you next Friday, and keep and support Green Left.
Yeah, see you on the streets. And we're just going to go out with a little bit of Long Live Palestine by Low Key before Left After Breakfast.
This is for Palestine, Ramallah, West Bank, Gaza. This is for the child that is searching for an answer. Wish I could take your tears and replace them with laughter. Long live Palestine, long live Gaza. Palestine, Ramallah, West Bank, Gaza. This is for the child that is searching for an answer. Wish I could take your...
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.